Hi and hello, watch fans, and welcome to another edition of The Real Time Show with us, your friendly watchmaker, Rob Nuds, calling in all the way from Dresden, and me, your friendly neighborhood jeweler, Aloma Joseph, dialing in from my beloved Amsterdam. Today, I'm very honored and proud to welcome not only my friend, but also kinda fellow countryman, Oliver van Lanschot Hubrecht. Welcome, Oliver.
Hello, Alon. Hello, Rob. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for inviting me on the show. Super excited to be with you guys and to share a little bit about Alpina, about myself in these exciting times.
Thank you for coming on the show. You are the brand director of Alpina, an amazing Swiss brand, 141 years old or young.
Correct.
However we want to call it. You are already 8 years with the brand. We are recording this literally 2 days before the fireworks are going to go off in Geneva for the 2024 edition of Watches and Wonders, which is the second year you guys are exhibiting there. How are you feeling?
Super excited, pumped up. I must say that, second year. So last year was a first experience for us. We're a little bit more knowledgeable and prepared this year, but super excited. And I must say that it really comes much quicker than we think. It always seems far away, and then suddenly we're here.
Before we dive into your personal journey into the watchmaking industry and the amazing brand that is Alpina, what happens at HQ for you guys in the ramp up to such a fair and the most important fair, I guess, of the year? You guys are also present at Geneva Watch Days, but what's happening there now in Plan Le Haut Geneva?
So definitely excitement. We're preparing at multiple levels. Of course, we've got people that are busy on the stand at Panexpo in Geneva. We've got people who are busy here in the manufacturers. We're going to be also welcoming our markets here for a kickoff session in the manufacturer on Monday. So we've got about 60 people coming. We're going to, brief and pump up, for the show to come. I think on one hand, excitement. On the other hand, it's a little bit the calm before the fireworks, as you say. Everybody's like still looking at each other and saying, yeah, really? I mean, is this really going to happen on Monday, Aaron? So definitely excited. That's for sure. Stressed, I wouldn't say so. I think really more looking forward to it. To be honest, Watches and Wonders for us is really the biggest event of the year. Other than sports events for Alpina, of course. But it's really something we work on almost a full year. Of course, from a product perspective, from a markets perspective. And then in terms of sales, of course, it's a key event for us. But it then really starts to gear up, two, 3 weeks before, where suddenly, the deadlines are coming up, the meetings are getting organized, although things are coming a little bit earlier in the year. But definitely always a little bit of pressure there, but positively so, I would say.
I think you're doing pretty well if you're not stressed by this point. I mean, that's quite an achievement. I think I've seen a lot of brand directors, CEOs, managing directors running around like headless chickens with just a few days to go, panicking that things aren't going to be ready in time. I suppose there's a slight advantage in that you are so local to the fair that you don't have perhaps the same logistical concerns as many brands traveling from further afield. But what have you learned from previous exhibitions of this nature that is helping you prepare for this fair now with such confidence?
Yeah, well, I think it's really a team effort. Obviously, we've got, people that have been with the company now for a very long time. We've got people in management team that have been, you know, for like 10, 15, 20 years, obviously part of the Frédéric Constant group. And I think the experience from many years is really paying off now. Obviously, we had Basel for many, many years, which was a little bit of a different logistically, as you say. Being in Geneva helps for sure. That's one element. But then, I think it's a team effort, experience, enthusiasm, and proximity, I think, is probably what helps us prepare best for it.
So how many new models do you have ready to release to the world come Monday?
So we've got two key launches for Watches and Wonders. So basically, we're going to be presenting eight different novelties that we're super excited to show. We've been focusing on the extreme case design that we originally launched in back in 2022, which is really guiding, let's say, the product development and the communication around the brand as well. We need to make that design recognizable. And I'm super, proud and excited to say that this is going to be coming within the C-Strong, C environment. With a really beautiful designed watch. Super excited to be presenting that. And then also declining the extreme case into smaller case sizes.
Well, that's very good to hear. We love hearing about smaller case sizes and more versatility being built out within existing collections. And both Alan and I are big fans of the C-Strong, so we can't wait to see the upgrades to that line. Now, you said that you've been at Baselworld in the past, and for anybody that hasn't been to Palexpo, which is the main location of Watches and Wonders, they may not know that the floor plan from Baselworld was lifted and dropped from Basel to Geneva. So it's very odd for people that have been going to Baselworld for many years and now go to Watches and Wonders to see almost exactly the same layout as they were used to seeing in Basel for all those years. How is it different for you working with the organizers at Palexpo? Is it difficult to get the displays as you want them, or is it all a very seamless operation these days?
Well, I think it's definitely a learning. As I said, this is our second year. So last year was already quite an achievement to be able to be there in the first place. From a timing perspective, from also, let's say, discussions and negotiations with the organization. So, of course, it's quite a change from Basel, where originally we had, a much bigger space, a much bigger stand that was obviously built and a presence that evolved over many years. So we had to some extent, downgrade a little bit to a smaller space to start at Watches and Wonders, in the sense that we're located in La Place, which is smaller surfaces. But I must say that the experience last year was super positive, really dynamic, lots of people coming. It was a little bit of a fight, you know, to get enough space, get enough meeting rooms, and so on. Now, the idea is, of course, to make this evolve. So we took the decision this year to remain in that area, and then take our time a little bit to make the right steps to get to the level where we want to get. But definitely, you should be seeing some evolution probably coming in as of next year. You mentioned also that you see some stands and booths, you know, that are exactly the same as from Basel. So indeed, there's this whole area that's sort of a replica of parts of what Basel looked like a few years ago, and so. Looking forward to see how that evolves already this year.
Many consumers don't always realize that
these fairs are actually trade fairs. So retailers come visit and they buy usually 1 year ahead. How much do you sell actually at such a fair? So we have a lot of listeners who like the business aspect of the watch industry. How important is such a fair for a brand like yours, looking at both buy-in by retailers and your distributors that you have? And also, how much time do you spend as a brand director talking to the press?
Yeah, so it's a very good question, I must say, because as a brand director, obviously, I've got strong responsibility and drive for business development. So that's one aspect with distribution and with retail, of course. And then on the other side, Watch the Wonders is a huge opportunity to speak about the brand, to speak about what we're doing, to speak about our launches with the press. So for me, really, I share my time between those two activities. To start with the sales, obviously, we start selling to our markets, distribution, much earlier in the year. So we actually start doing that for 2024, back already in August. We presented our novelties and products to the markets. So we already take, let's say, a full plan from the different markets at that stage. But then really, Watches and Wonders is a super important event for retail. So what happens there is that different markets and different distribution sells to their retail there. And obviously, we have all the key retailers that are visiting due to the presence, of course, of all these magnificent brands that are present during the show. So we have full agendas really with retail from all the different countries visiting, and we really sell our 2024 collection to the retailers, starting with the products that we're actually launching at that time. So obviously, sales is an ongoing process, but the event is really key for us, especially for all what we call A-plus retail, so really the high-end retailers that are really all there during the show, and we're basically taking orders there and doing a fair share of our sales there. Of course, we take orders also earlier, so we do local shows in our key markets where we present also our products at that stage and take orders. And then, of course, we've got field sales, you know, that are visiting customers ongoing process. But yeah, I mean, it's for sure, it's a super important sales event.
So talk to me about those key markets. Where is it around the world that Alpina has most success? And in addition to that, which areas are you looking to develop in the near future?
So yeah, interesting question as well. So as you mentioned, maybe I'll speak a bit more about the brand afterwards. But we are a historical brand, but then with a, let's say, a shorter recent history. So we're really looking at focusing right now on our key markets, which are essentially in Western Europe and in the US. So those are really, let's say, the markets that are driving the sales for the brand at the moment. So key markets specifically, we're speaking about France, Germany, Switzerland. Of course, the US is still number one, but with huge growth potential, given the positioning of the brand and obviously the size of the market. We're available in close to 50 countries. But a lot of the countries, mainly, let's say, in Asia, in the Middle East, remain relatively small in terms of market share. But it's, of course, super important to be available across. So the focus right now is really to develop these key markets, to really make them to a level that is representative for geographically for the brand. But then we're looking at developing other markets. So we've opened recently in India, for example, which is obviously huge potential now as well. So we've opened 20 points of sales over the last couple of years, obviously many more to come. We've opened Dubai last year as well. But then we're looking at really increasing and almost doubling our presence in terms of point of sales over the next 2 to 3 years.
For our listeners that are not that familiar with Alpina, and while they're listening and they are surfing the web, the website is alpinawatches.com. Give us an elevator pitch, please, Oliver. What is Alpina? Maybe give us a quick summary of the DNA, the collections, and price points.
Alpina is a beautiful brand. It has a huge history. It was a super important player in the first half of the 20th century. It was actually created by somebody called Gottlieb Hauser in 1883 as a watchmaker's union. So really first to bring different actors of the watchmaking industry together at the time. So suppliers, designers, even retailers, together around the table, you know, to be stronger as a group. The original intention of the brand, other than, let's say, this group aspect, was really to create strong and resistant watches that could really resist the harsh environment given by the Alps. The founders were actually alpinists, also a reason for which the brand was called Alpina at the time. So they really developed the brand to a huge level. I think in the 1920s, there were like 2,000 point of sales worldwide. They participated in the development, you know, of pilot's watches in the 1920s, defined even the sports watch as we know it today with the Alpina 4 in 1938, divers watches in the 1960s. So really a huge player. Then the brand sort of almost disappeared in the 1980s following the quartz crisis. And when many brands were taken over by the groups at the time, Alpina, for some reason, was left aside until it was acquired by Peter and Anita Stas, founders of Frédéric Constant, back in 2002, and then back in Basel World in 2003. And ever since then, so then I'll call that more recent history of Alpina, so in the last 20 years, so the brand is 141 years this year. We've really focused, let's say, on preserving the DNA of the brand. So really going back to this alpinist philosophy and wish to create strong and resistant watches with the alpine environment, in the background. So if you look at where we are today, I think we have a very clear and comprehensive collection, four pillars. So really air, land, and sea, and our heritage pillar, with the DNA being the most close in the land environment with the alpiner collection and the extreme products that we've relaunched in 2022. So that's really for the organizations. We've got about 50 references in the collection. So it's also not too wide. It's very clear, very comprehensive. Very important to mention the price positioning. So we've got an average price of around 1,500 euros. So going anywhere between starting at 1,000 up to 3,000 euros. And it's a super interesting area to be in at the moment, as many brands have left this area, increasing prices very quickly, but also taking the brand back from multi-brand retail. So we have a huge opportunity and place to take within that price positioning sports watches with a beautiful history that not enough people know about.
If I did the math quickly, this is year 2022, that it's risen as a phoenix out of the ashes, part of the FC group, today part of the Citizen group. How much autonomy do you as a brand director have for Alpina. So basically, in layman's words, can you do whatever you want, or how much do you need to report, and what's the synergy with sister brand Frédéric Constant?
It's a very good question as well. I think that in the last 21-22 years, if you want to say, Alpina has been trying to find its way. I think that today we're really spot on. So we're really back to our horological collection with a very, let's say, close link to where we come from our heritage. I think positioning is really correct. So to some extent, you really want to preserve that, and you want to focus, and you don't want to do too many things. You want to make the brand recognizable again, understandable, and clear. Over the last 20 years, Alpina tried to find its way a little bit. So we tried many things. So to the other side of what I just said, we have, you know, quite a lot of freedom and to try different things, to develop different things. You probably saw in the past years strong focus on smartwatches that we did basically between 2015 and 2021. Brought us a lot, but it brought us also quite a lot of complexity. We also realized, you know, that we have to go back and focus back on our DNA, which is mechanical watches. So I would like to say that we have the chance, you know, to have freedom. It's obviously really a team effort. We have the chance, as you said, also to be part of the Frédéric Constant group. We can benefit a lot from that, from the whole team that we have over here. So I think the beauty of it is that that we have a lot of competencies. We have a lot of experience over here that can be brought to the brand. But then, of course, my focus and then also my priority is really that we have a collection that corresponds to where we come from, to our roots, that is really appealing and exciting, you know, for the positioning and period that we are in today. So a lot of fun and exciting things to do. I think we've got a fantastic playground with the all the developments that we've done in the past, the heritage aspect, but then also the universes that we're playing in today, which is, again, you know, driven by the Alps, by the outdoors, by the mountains, but then also the air and the sea. So I think all that's brought together makes it quite unique, quite exciting. And I think I'm super happy with where the brand is today. And also to be able to partly write, you know, history of the brand. You know, that's 141 years old, and to take a part in this and bring it, you know, bring it further.
You said it beautifully. I translate that you found the brand's stride. I am talking as a pure watch nerd enthusiast. I am not a retailer either for Frédéric Constant or Alpina. I've been following you guys for quite some time. It really clicked for me when I visited the manufacturer and we hung out in Geneva, you and I, and you showed me the prototype for the Alpina Extreme. That must have been maybe 2 years ago with the integrated bracelet. I immediately ordered one. I'm actually wearing it right now. So my enthusiasm is authentic. And yes, I am subjective, but that's what we do on the Real Time Show. We obviously gravitate to the people we like and the brands we like. I personally think that you guys broke the mold there from doing an heritage piece with just retro-inspired stuff. I really found your DNA there. During Geneva Watch days, I, for example, loved the Quartz World Timer as well. I obviously loved that you went back to celebrate the 140th with your rectangular piece in sterling silver, if I remember correctly, and later you made it in steel. As an unlimited, the Art Deco-ish piece. You mentioned the group aspect of Frédéric Constant and the Citizen Group, but you guys do not use any Japanese movements, if I'm correct, so nothing Citizen, and actually you don't use any manufacture Frédéric Constant calibers. You actually developed your own. Why is that?
I think, indeed, the connection right now is spot on. So we have a very strong piece given by the Extreme. I remember, indeed, when we looked at it together, and I'm super happy that you're wearing a piece. I'm smiling right now, imagining you in Amsterdam. So we've got a super piece that we really want to make recognizable, that really ticks all the boxes of the DNA. You know, strong, sturdy, certain, you know, sophistication and elegance to it at a price point that really is interesting, you know, at anywhere between 1,600 and 2,500 euros with value, you know, that you really don't find on the market right now. Then we have also, indeed, you mentioned the Quartz Worldtimer, which is a fantastic piece. Super affordable as well, you know, around 1,000 euros, which is really beautiful looking and very accessible once again, which uses a quartz GMT movement, all the way to the heritage that you mentioned as well. We actually integrated original mechanical movements from the 1950s in that piece, super limited, 2x14 pieces, that we then created a volume piece out of with an automatic movement. Now, there are several elements over here. Indeed, Frédéric Constant and Alpina as well, over the last 20 years, have developed movements here internally. Manufacture for Alpina, you can think of the Fibac chronograph, which was first actually developed in Alpina and then integrated in Frédéric Constant. You can think of the bumper movement also as a reminiscent of the bumper movement of a revolving rotor back and forth from the 1950s that we launched back in 2021. Important to say that today we really want to keep our price positioning with an average of around 1,500. We don't want to go up too fast. So we don't really want to go up 2,500 to 3,000 euros. We don't want to go over that, because we want to, at this level of brand awareness, we really want to keep that clear positioning. So we're not going at this stage too crazy on developments of movements within the collection. So we're essentially at this stage integrating existing movements that enable us to preserve this value, price point, and product that you can afford at this price range. So that's one element. That it doesn't mean that we're not going to be developing this in the future. But indeed, yeah, we're not using any Citizen Japanese movements. It's fully Swiss made. I think that's super important for us today at this stage as well, given, you know, the history of the brand and the DNA.
I have two questions. It's kind of a two-part question. Firstly, I want to say what I love, love, love about Alpina is the tight collection, how there's not much wasted space in the catalog. I often criticize mega brands in Switzerland for just throwing a lot of stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. And they do it so liberally, you have no idea what the brand message is anymore. And I think Alpina has done a very nice job over the last two decades of triangulating its perfect position in the market. As you say, you feel like you're pretty much there. You've experimented with new technologies. You've tried things with older styles, newer styles, trying to find exactly where your position is. First part of the question is, will you continue to do that? So create an even leaner catalog to trim down the pieces that you don't feel currently represent the future of Alpina as well as they could, and then advance the remaining collections, such as the C-Strong, for example. So you're developing that, you're enhancing it with this year's wave of releases. Will we see the same thing in the other lines? And also, second part of the question, is that also tied to how you're able to maintain this incredible value? Because you're absolutely right, at that price point between 1,600, 2,500 euros ballpark, that's an incredible watch with an incredible heritage, with Swiss-made components coming from a maker that's known around the world. Does it help to have a leaner collection when it comes to offering value, possibly linked to the volume of production you're able to put into each individual reference?
Indeed, I think that looking at the past as well, and even looking across, you know, the board, you know, within the industry, one tends to do too much, you know, to really, you have plenty of ideas, you want to do all of them, you get products in the collection, you're scared about, you know, taking them away. And the result of all that is that it brings complexity within the organization, that's for sure, in terms of production, in terms of just management of the, let's say, indeed more production side, but then also in terms of communication. When you do too much, then you get a little bit lost, especially with a brand like Alpina, which indeed has credibility, legitimacy within all the universes we're playing in, given the history. But then from, let's say, an audience perspective and a communication perspective, people can only take so much in, you know, and remember that much. So I think, first of all, it's really simplified to be stronger and more recognizable, I would say, is the first element. Then the second, indeed, in terms of value, I think that also is an important point. We invested quite a lot in the development of the Extreme case, to speak about that specifically. You know, it's a four-layer case design. All the layers, all the parts are basically manufactured independently with different finishing, which really gives it, let's say, this high value and sophisticated look to that. So we want to focus on that, you know, also leverage and develop on that design, you know, that we've it's taken time to develop, to get it right, to start communicating on it. And we really want to now benefit from all that and really get the message across and really make our audience, our customers, our future customers discover this and understand it, you know, and recognize it. So I think we made a strong choice, and I'm ever more convinced that this is the right way to go. Also, from a retailer perspective, and maybe also Alan can relate to this, is that you want to also, in the window of a retailer, you know, you want to be comprehensive, you want to be recognized, you want people to understand, and going into many directions is also generates confusion, and basically the brand doesn't benefit from it at all. So I think it to answer your question, I think yes, it's coherency and leanness within the connection brings us at this stage of the brand development. It brings us a strength in terms of communication, but then in terms of value as well.
So let's talk a little bit about communication specifically. How do you find the current watch media landscape? Are you finding that people are picking up your news and they're communicating it freely? And how do you double down on that with partnerships, with ambassadors, and also event sponsorship? Because you do quite a bit of both.
If we look back at what we've been doing last year, I think we celebrated our 140th anniversary. So that was quite something. We celebrated this with a product, which I mentioned already, with the Carré Heritage 140 years. So that, and of course, celebrating it through events. But then we saw really from a media and a press aspect, huge interest on the heritage of the brand. On when you come out with a product, you know, specifically celebrating it and even integrated, you know, new old stock movements and so on, you can really see appeal and interest. So we saw a really nice coverage and a lot of interest around that aspect. The extreme as well, we've really been focusing communication and also presentations around that product to explain also where we come from, value, really this sort of hero product communication. And again, going back to the previous question, doing too much then makes it a little bit confusing. So too many press releases, too many launches at the end creates a little bit of, dilutes the message. So from a product perspective, focusing on the extreme and the heritage has been super beneficial. And we really saw an increase in coverage and interest from press, media in general. And the second element is, of course, sponsorship, events, ambassadors. We're very linked to the alpine environment, to the mountains, to skiing, and we've been investing on this area also for the last over 10 years now, 10, 15 years, especially within free ride skiing, for example. So 10 days ago, we had the final of the Free Ride World Tour Extreme in Verbier, which is a super platform, which we've been partnering with for the last 7 years now. So we're really being recognized within the sports as being a strong partner and within that that community also, let's say, the watch, which is recognizable there. And we benefit that from that, definitely, from the exposure we're getting from the event, but then also via ambassadors. We're really, we've built a strong team with, you know, rookies, you know, young and up and coming skiers, but then also more established, and experienced skiers who have been, winning over the years. So it's really exciting to bring the brand message across via these ambassadors. So all of that together, I think, brings a really nice mix. But again, less is more here. I think that we really have to focus, and I think we're going in the right direction right now, definitely, and super excited about presenting the novelties and meeting with journalists and the press next week.
I want to go now back to, and I'm saying this with a sarcastic undertone, the Dutch mafia at the FC Group. Did it help you or worked against you having a Dutch heritage and roots?
Now, I joined the group simply because of my, so I'm joking a little bit, because of my competencies, and my drive. No, I think, yeah, indeed, there's the Dutch heritage, from Frederik Constol, now also with of course, Anita and Peter, Pim Kuslach, of course, also playing such a strong role with the development of the brand, and Niels today. So I wouldn't say that it was a too strong decision maker, but it of course helps to have the same culture behind.
Obviously kidding, because I had the honor to work hands-on with both Mr. and Mrs. Stas. They are friendly, but in business, they are cutthroat in the sense that they want to win. So in a sports mentality, they always want the gold medal. So they always chose competent people. Now, looking at your track record, this job is your first one in the watch industry. Tell me what you did not expect, what you did expect, what you hate, and what you love about the watch industry.
This is very true. It's my first job within the watch industry. So I've always been driven, by sales, by sales and marketing, basically. So I've been working in other industries, which has also brought, I think, a lot to me, which I've also, which I've loved and hated as well, like many things in life, but definitely brought a lot. And I've always been passionate about watches. So the question is more, yeah, maybe why did I not dive into the industry earlier on? It's an earlier stage. But for sure, I think what I've learned previously, you know, makes who I am today, and also absolutely would make the same choices again. Now, what do I love? I think, indeed, you know, watchmaking is about bringing a beautiful product within, you know, a beautiful environment to people out there who love what you do as well. I think that the options, you know, that you have, the playgrounds you have, are pretty much, you know, endless. So it's all about emotions, and I can really feel emotions, I think, within the industry. It's all about passionate people. It's all about, you know, trying to make a difference, trying to bring something exciting, trying to, you know, to bring stars in the eyes of people you work with, first of all, and of course, people to whom you bring your products to. So I think that's really what drives me. Specifically at Alpina, I think we've got such a gem of a brand, you know, that has brought so many innovations at the time, but also developed, you know, the whole sports watch environment. And I think that the potential, you know, to develop that and to bring it into the future, you know, it's super super exciting, and really, I mean, drives me every day. I think another element, I think the team aspect. Sometimes you also get the question, you know, what drives you in the morning, you know, when you go to the works. Of course, the brand aspect, you know, to be able to develop the brand, I think is obviously key. But then the team as well, I think we really, you obviously know the team here at Alpina, you know, very driven people. I think we're all super engaged. We want to, and I think this team aspect is also something that I've not experienced really before. So that's a huge driver. Then, of course, you know, we've got a lot of, there are also headaches. I mean, that's for sure. Not everything is easy every day. I think, obviously, you know, we're working really on the long term things. Although we as a brand and within the group, we go very fast compared to, I think, other brands within the industry, that the process is still still lengthy. Sometimes you tend to want to go faster than you actually can, and then that brings complexity. That brings, obviously, you know, some difficulties. But that's also at the end, you know, the beauty of it and what you have to work with and what makes it so rewarding at the end of the day.
You're such a good speaker, Oliver. It's prose to my ears, and it's one of the easiest interviews ever. Rob and I hardly have to do anything. So I'm listening carefully to what you said. You have a gem in your hands, and I know you, so I know you mean it, because what you say is what you mean and you do what you say. But also looking at your track record, this is the first watch brand you're at, and you're actually a long time there. So I believe you. One thing that I remember is you worked at Red Bull, and you worked at Red Bull where they didn't have that many partnerships with watch brands yet. Today, you all see Tag Heuer, Tudor, and God knows whom. What did you take away from that job and implement it into the watch industry? Because some brands are filled with people that are either Excel managers and or have zero experience in the watch industry. That could be a negative or a disadvantage. It can obviously be an advantage when it's new blood injected into the industry. What did you learn from Red Bull? Because they obviously are very innovative in everything they do, and they keep on innovating, especially marketing.
Working at Red Bull was an amazing experience. Obviously, extremely strong and powerful and also avant-gardiste, if you want, a little bit in the way to create a brand image, you know, and making it that strong, obviously by creating things and using areas that that other brands had never tapped into, you know. So it was really going into, of course, extreme sports, but also urban sports, let's say more street culture and so on. So that's all areas, you know, that they saw as a potential before anybody else, any else did. Then I must say that it's obviously an extremely professional company in the way to manage partnerships, to make sure that you leverage, you know, every aspect of it. So I think trying to find a unique way to communicate, but with a very, let's say, a professional and strict way of managing. So that's really what I took out of it. Obviously, there's quite a few links with, if you look at obviously the watch industry and what Red Bull has done, it's really creating you know, a dream. You know, when you drink, for me, when you drink a can of Red Bull, or if you look at an Alpina watch, you want much more than you know, sugar water or the time, right? It's all about creating a dream and creating emotions, and thinking, you know, about going skiing the next weekend, you know, or even adrenaline or whatever. So I think obviously the two industries are close into that. And I think, yeah, obviously coming at Alpina, then we've done partnerships with Red Bull as well. You know, we did the air race for a few years, obviously with the Free Ride World Tour. So obviously we're not the first to do that either. But I really see a lot of, you know, links and yeah, I think that, we're doing a pretty good job, you know, at getting there and bringing it out there and bringing, anyway, dreams to the people who are wearing an Alpina watch.
Talking of dreams for people that are wearing Alpina watches and people that might one day wear Alpina watches, what would you say to somebody that was about to start their journey in the watchmaking industry? You've had 8 very successful years with Alpina, and I'm sure you've learned an incredible amount of things that would be useful to someone that's just setting out on the same path, or at least what I'm sure they would hope would become the same path. What kind of advice could you give to somebody joining the watch industry today?
Yeah, I think you should be pretty driven and motivated and hardworking, you know, to set yourself a strong objective that you want to get to. I think we have something at Alpina which I look back to regularly, is the Alpinist philosophy. You know, it's like to be perseverant, to stay true to your roots, and it's basically the never give up vision, and with a wish, you know, to lift up, you know, to go to the next level. And what I would like to say is that often within the watch industry, you know, you say it's quite a closed industry. A lot of people have been there for a long time, maybe even started in the industry at a very, you know, coming out of a watchmaking school or out of business school or so on, and basically make their way across the industry, sometimes by changing brands, you know, or by evolving within a group. And what I would like to say is that also, you know, coming at a later stage, then obviously there are a lot of things that one can bring. If you're passionate about it, then I mean, you'll learn. One can learn everything, you know, at any stage, I think. So I think that if you have the passion and the drive, you know, to bring something to the next level, then you should just go for it, and then be perseverant and obviously stay true to yourself, you know, and then bring whatever you can.
What's the current makeup of the workforce of Alpina today? I noticed your ambassadors are pretty nicely split between male and female. There is a leaning towards the male side of things, as one might expect with so many extreme sports and watches that are built for these outdoor environments. But it's nice to see that you've got a lot of female athletes representing the brand on the world stage. But what about in-house? Do you have a relatively even split of employees? Are they split differently across different departments, for example? What's the watchmaking side of things like?
We're quite evenly split. So within the company, obviously, and the watchmaking area, I think you maybe have a little bit in general. I think it's known, and within the industry, yeah, it's quite, let's say, masculine or gents oriented, but actually at Alpina we're part of the Frédéric Constant group, as we share, you know, we share a lot with them. I find quite evenly in the mix, which is in balance, which I think is very, very positive. Within if you look at then the brand itself, so at the moment we've got a split. In products, we've got 90% gents and then 10% ladies at this stage. We're probably now with the smaller case sizes and so on, we're going to be going wider and to a more, let's say, balanced split. But then in terms of ambassadors, yeah, then we have more guides who are actually, representing the brand and skiing or sailing, you know, with an Alpina watch and wrist. But yeah, this is going to tend, I think, to balance out, and I definitely think that that is only positive.
In about 10 days' time, Watches and Wonders will have wrapped up. You'll have packed up. You might have gone home. You may not have gone home. You might still be on site cleaning up the mess of the fair. But what would you like to look back on after more than a week of showing people watches? For you to feel like this has been a great, successful fair for Alpina,
I liked what you said, and Alan said also when we were speaking a little bit earlier. I think it's all about encounters. It's about, you know, I'm already looking forward to seeing both of you in the, you know, in the flesh. So I think it's really about, you know, catching up with people that you know, and meeting new people, getting a lot of energy out of all of it. You usually feel, and you know it also even more than I do, that at the end of these fairs, you're totally exhausted to some extent. So super pumped up by all the energy. But then it's like suddenly the day it stops. It's like, wow, you know, what am I doing today? So it feels suddenly very, very empty. But yeah, I think that what I would like to take out of it is obviously benefiting from all the meetings with journalists, with the press, with the media, and you know, really discussing, getting energy, getting the message across, showing everything that we've been working on and proud to show. That's the first thing. Then the second thing is obviously, and to equal matter is obviously the sales, you know, that's obviously a super important aspect of it. Again, we've got a super strong connection and we're already looking, actually, to be honest, we have a planned growth of 37% in the plan for next year. So it's massive. But it's all given, you know, by what we initiated and what we presented. So it's going to be nice to see what comes out of it at the end of the show as well. But, yeah, generally speaking, I'm just looking forward at looking back at, mainly it's all about people, you know, it's about, who you meet and, what you learn, what you get across as a message. But also super excited about seeing what all the other brands are present.
As are we both as well. We can't wait to see you too, and we can't wait to see the new watches from Alpina. Oliver, thank you very much for spending time with us. I'm actually amazed that you managed to carve out an hour to chat to us on the Real Time Show so soon before the fair commences, but we really, really do appreciate that, because getting such an up close and personal review of what the show is likely to be like and what it means to you personally and as a brand is really, really valuable to us. And also, I hope our listeners. Talking of our listeners, hello everyone out there. If you would like to get in touch, then please do contact us via either our dedicated Instagram handle at therealtime.show or via our email addresses. You can contact either me, Alon, or David via Rob, Alon, or David at therealtime.show. And of course, you can still use the contact form on the website, www.therealtime.show. We hope to have Oliver on again in the future, so if you have any questions for him about the brand or more about his background, please do send those through and we will gladly ask him next time he joins us in the virtual studio. Until next time, stay safe and keep on ticking.